very carefully. The 14th page here. I hope you read that carefully. Now, I personally have read it myself, and I'm so disappointed in the quality of that document, I must just say. It does not seem to be this promised policy that was articulated and religiously raised in our meeting. The 14 pager. No, some people have received it. I can give you mine. There is a copy. It was received yesterday. And it's a list of some of the problems we know. Not necessarily. It's entitled Proposed Policy on Parliament Budget. We were told it was a policy. I don't think it is a policy. If it is a policy, it's a terrible policy for that matter. And so I'm not sure how it's going to link to this discussion of the bill. Jenkins is going to juggle and see how he does it. That's his boss and himself. But I was just saying, I'm pleading with members just to read it carefully, slowly, so that as we want to include it in that bill, let's just be a bit careful now. I really read it. I will read it again today just to satisfy that myself that I really had read it. For instance, under generic training in budget oversight, I mean, it's supposed to be policy, says, we believe that every member of parliament must receive generic training in budget oversight as part of his or her basic training. This has to cut across all committees, be it portfolio select committees. In order to oversee the budget allocation, it is necessary that an understanding of the basic base. Gosh, man. Maybe then Donald is going to be, we will have to hope in Donald to come and assist in terms of developing this policy. I'm done.
Now, Chair, I'm also confused. Yesterday, there was said there's a policy document of 14 pages. When we received this, the proposed policy. So this policy is not accepted. Well, there's nowhere at already and policy. There's a proposed policy, it's a draft. If I read the wording correct, proposed policy on parliament budget. It's not a policy, but yesterday was said there's a 14-page policy. So there's a big difference. A policy and a proposed policy. So then we must look into this policy and say, on this policy we disagree with this following and we make adjustments and we make proposals in the in, but this, as I say, this is not the final policy, this one. This is a draft.
And this is why I'm saying let's just read it carefully. But it is a very rough policy, if you ask me. Just reading through it yesterday, I felt if this is policy, then it's terrible. A terrible piece of policy. Right, let's then, number two, what we will have to do is to, there is a program of the committee. I think after all the discussions, we must just look at that program and adopt it. And number three, there is a proposal which has been made by Comrade Dunn, which I think I agree with, that when we've done everything, we, especially from the point of view of the ANC, if we can have a 15-minute caucus, we shall be briefing provinces. And so what kind of approach are we taking to provinces, in briefing provinces? I'm just putting that on the table.
But I hear you say that all members are talking.
No problem. That's good stuff. Lastly, we're having a video conference with the Office of the Auditor General 1 o'clock, 15th floor, 120 plane. Because the Auditor General, I spoke to him this morning, he's really not available to come over. It was a pretty too short a notice to come to ask them today to be here. But also they've really made this arrangement for that, at least as we go in brief provinces, we also have a sense of what they're saying about the FAPL. Now, having then said that, let's then welcome the national...
I'm sorry, sir, before we pass this one, is it possible that maybe we can just compile some common on the corner? Or I'm not sure whether I'm preempting what your caucus wants in preparation for the what you call for the briefing, so that I don't say my own things, that Comrade Rob in Eastern Cape says something else. Okay.
The main purpose is just to be saying this is the kind of line we want to put to provinces. Okay. The National Treasury then has two, a delegation of two. I'm not sure who's leading. Over to them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Andrew Donaldson, and I'm going to just say a few things about this Moneybills Amendment Procedure Bill, and my colleague will go through the presentation, which has some suggestions and some comments on the issues here. And then, if I may, we do have some quite specific detailed comments on drafting, which we probably won't get through in full in the course of this morning, which we will leave with the committee or undertake to take up subsequently with the committee, as there are quite specific wording issues that are quite important in this bill. But let me just say that there is, of course, a long history behind the development of this bill. It is now gone through a extensive process of consultation and drafting, and so we are trying to assist in making the quite specific procedural implications of the bill understood and well drafted. I think in practice this is a very substantial reform and a series of changes in the relationship between the Treasury and Parliament that will evolve over time, and I'm sure we'll learn as we go. But we are certainly ready to support Parliament in enhancing its role in the finalization of all sides of the budget, revenue, spending, future plans, and the way those are adapted over time. And so we are focusing here on the practical issues, the implementation of these, this commitment to put in place a procedure for amendment. There's no argument with the underlying principles and intent. Right, I'm going to ask Janine just to say a few things about the issues that have been discussed in the portfolio committee, and we did receive from you, Chair, a request to consider principles that might apply to provinces, and so we do have some suggestions on that, which are also included in this presentation.
Yeah, so just before that, members, as you remember in the last discussion, that's what one of the things we picked up, this lack of norms and standards for provinces, as if provinces would not be allowed to have a procedure to pass money bills. And so I'm happy that they have done some substantial work on that. Over to you, Madam.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Committee, and we appreciate the opportunity to present to you today. So, initially, we have a couple of general comments regarding the bill, and we note that in the bill there are going to be very tight time frames, both for Parliament and for the National Treasury officials to comply with. And so it's going to require some very efficient and effective coordination between Treasury and Parliament in order for the processes to run smoothly and effectively. And so there's going to be a great deal of importance placed on relationship issues in connection with this bill so that everything can run smoothly, and there'll need to be very clear communication and coordination. And we've also noted that there's going to have to be a very effective and coordinated relationship developed between the National Treasury and the Budget Office that's to be established in Parliament in terms of the bill, so that then there can be an efficient working of the two entities, and that there won't necessarily be an unnecessary duplication of work, that there may be some sharing of information in order to promote the processes and in order to ensure an overall effective budget processes in Parliament. And it is not clear in the bill currently exactly when it is intended that the bill will come into operation, and it will be important for officials in Parliament and the National Treasury to be able to have some advanced understanding of when the bill is likely to come into operation, because there's going to have to be substantial long-term organization and planning in both Parliament and the National Treasury in order to effectively begin to implement the bill. There's going to have to be a lot of work done in advance of the bill coming into operation in order for it to be able to be implemented properly when it does come into operation. So we have a number of comments regarding some of the specific provisions in the bill. Quite a number of them are very specific drafting suggestions, so I won't really touch on those, and they're contained in an additional document which we've circulated this morning. But I'll just highlight a few of the more important substantive aspects that we've queries that we have in relation to the bill. In relation to Section 2B, we've identified that there may be some potential difficulty created in respect of that provision, because the fiscal framework adopted by Parliament may differ in some respects from the framework submitted to Parliament. So some consideration may perhaps be given to that factual aspect, and consider if there needs to be some potential adjustment in that provision. And in Section 3, we note that the application of the bill... Oh, sorry, these are some additional, more substantive comments that unfortunately we weren't able to include in this document, but they are in the other document which we've circulated.
I think, Jim, maybe we should just go through the presentation,
okay,
and then we can come back to these additional issues.
Okay. So in relation to Section 5, there are some issues which we've identified, in that Section 5.1d refers to annual reports, and it's unclear if this refers to the previous year's annual report or the one that's tabled within the current financial year that refers to the previous financial year. So if it refers to the most recent annual report, then the reports in Section 5.2 will only be tabled after 30th of September, and therefore those reports may have a limited effect on the MTPPF process. And we would suggest that these reports should inform the budgeting process and therefore would limit the need to make actual amendments, but it is not quite clear why it has been determined that these reports must be tabled prior to the tabling of the MTBPS report. So perhaps some consideration could be given to when the timing of when the annual report should be tabled. If it is possible that these reports should inform the MTBBS reports as well, but it is not quite clear in the legislation. And so therefore, we suggest that some consideration be given to the timing of the tabling of the report and whether it's intended that it should inform the MTBPS process. And in relation to Section 6, which deals with the medium-term budget policy statement, it is not quite, it's not clearly specified in the clause if the processes in the two houses are intended to run concurrently. Probably they are, but it would be helpful to clearly indicate that the processes should be running concurrently. And in relation to Section 7, there is an inconsistency between Sections 6 and 7 because the Minister of Finance tables the MTBPS in Parliament, in both Houses of Parliament, but then the budget statement, the appropriation bill, and division of revenue bill are only tabled in the National Assembly. So perhaps some consideration should be given, you know, about the consistency of where the documents, various documents, should be tabled by the minister.
Just before you proceed, just there, you see, the problem there is that I don't think that is accurate. Because MTBPS is also presented in the National Assembly. The only thing, basically, that happens is that, in fact, for all of those, there's this thing called a lock-up session. And we are all then under one roof, kind of unofficially. And so when, for instance, the MTBPS then is presented, we're sitting up there at the gallery. And even during the budget day, we're sitting up there at the gallery. And so it is not presented or tabled in the other house. I just wanted to correct that. Formally. Both formally and informally. It is not. Take it from me. I've been doing that for the last 4 or 5 years. Zarina, there's nothing you're going to say that's going to change what I've just said. What is said here is that it says because the minister tables the MTBBS. Right, that's something that you must just iron out because it's inaccurate.
Thank you very much. And in relation to Section 8, the legislation does not explain what the process that should be followed would be if the minister happened to disagree with the amendments which were made by the committee regarding the fiscal framework and revenue proposals. The hearing process to adopt the fiscal framework is held jointly between the two houses, but then they table separate reports. And Section 8.4 gives the committee the power to amend the fiscal framework and revenue proposals constrained by the conditions which are set out in subsections 5 and 6, but then the section doesn't really explain what is in relation to what is contained in subsections 6 and 11. So it would be helpful to look at those subsections in conjunction with each other and perhaps ensure that they appropriately speak to each other. And then in respect of Section 10, to the ENE, which is usually tabled with the budget, but the section as it's currently worded suggests that it must be tabled 16 days later when the fiscal framework has been adopted. And this would seem to be inconsistent with what's provided in sections 7, subsection 1 and 2, which includes section 27, subsection 4 of the PFMA. And we've noted that section 10.1c will require a change in the Treasury regulations. Currently, strategic plans are tabled 10 days before the discussion in the relevant portfolio committee. So those are some of the specific comments that we have in relation to some of the provisions. And then we noted in the previous committee meeting that examined this bill, and also through communications that we received from the committee chairperson, that there were concerns in the committee that the bill as it currently stands doesn't set out norms and standards for provincial legislation, which will be likely be adopted in relation to the amendment of money bills. And we were requested to consider this matter and try to come up with some proposals that might assist in coming up with some norms and standards for provincial legislation. And we certainly strongly support this proposal that the bill should set out some norms and standards in respect of provincial legislation so that there will be some consistency in the processes that are followed and ensure that, you know, there's some common framework governing provincial legislation in this regard. And it seems that potentially a similar approach in this legislation could be adopted to that which has been included in the Financial Management of Parliament Bill, where there's a section in the bill, the main body of the bill, which refers to provincial norms and standards being set out, and then in a schedule to the bill, you could include, you could specify the particular norms and standards. So we have some specific suggestions about what might constitute some useful norms and standards to include in the legislation. And so some of the aspects which we would identify as being important to include would be to set out procedures and provide and elaborate on what procedures should be followed in connection with a number of different processes. There should be a requirement for the establishment of a finance committee to consider money bills and appropriations. Most of the legislatures do generally have that currently, but this would make it clear that is an essential committee to have in the legislature. And we would recommend that it be provided that the proposals of money bills to the House should only be made via that committee of the legislature. And we would propose that there would be procedures set out and processes to be followed in relation to the introduction of the annual budget and appropriation bill and the other information that should be submitted in connection with that legislation. And we would also recommend that it be provided that the MEC for Finance should submit a multi-year provincial fiscal framework and revenue proposals and spending priorities for the province and a review of the actual spending which has been undertaken by the provincial departments in the province in order to set out a good overall framework in which the budgeting processes can take place. And also, and the requirement that the provincial framework should include revenue estimates and expenditure ceilings, that it should be first adopted by the legislature before there would be the commencement of a process to consider amendments to any expenditure proposals that are made, that are put before the legislature. We would also recommend that the MEC for Finance should submit proposals setting out strategic priorities, measurable objectives, and other performance information for each department, public entity, or institution against its expected revenue and proposed expenditure by program, subprogram, and various items of expenditure. And we would recommend that the legislature, through its committees, should annually assess the performance of the provincial departments through budgetary review processes and recommendation reports, and propose amendments to expenditure proposals that would be motivated in terms of those reports. And we would propose a requirement that the designated committee must submit a report to the legislature with proposed amendments for each amendment that considers the effect on provincial finance and service delivery and illustrates how the proposed amendments relate to key budget and spending documentation, so that there is some framework within which proposals are made. And we would also suggest that there should be a requirement that the MEC for Finance or any other affected MEC should be provided with a fair opportunity to comment on proposed amendments before they are considered in the House, and that their comments would be tabled along with those proposed amendments. And there should also be procedures provided for the consideration and passage of the appropriation bill, adjustments appropriation bill, and other money bills. And we would propose that amendments to money bills proposed by the MEC for Finance could be made in order to make any technical corrections that might arise that could be considered by the legislature. And we would also propose that there should be provision for the development of other institutions that could enhance the capacities of legislatures to assert their functions in terms of the amendment of money bills, not necessarily perhaps like a budget office per se, but other, they could undertake other measures that they see fit to enhance their capacity so they can properly consider the legislation and propose effective amendments. And we would also recommend that it's important that a mechanism would be developed and included in provincial legislation that relating to the interaction of the provincial committee with the NCOP committees who are specified in the money bill amendment procedure, so that there's a good linkage and processes are provided for. And in particular, it's important for there to be coordination of oversight in the areas of joint competencies. And we would recommend that the provincial legislature should be allowed sufficient space to develop their own institutions while there needs to be a common minimum standard of oversight that would be established in terms of the norms and standards to be included in the legislation. And we would also recommend that it needs to be emphasized that there would need to be necessary amendments to the rules of procedures in the legislature in order to establish the appropriate entities and institutions in the legislature, and also to facilitate the implementation of the legislation. And we would emphasize that some of the basic safeguards which are contained in the national legislation should also form a basis for safeguards in provincial legislation as well. In particular, in relation to providing for a centralized process that would ensure that there is consideration of all amendments comprehensively as well as all trade-offs in order to ensure an overall appropriate consideration of the amendment. And we would recommend the adoption of an expenditure ceiling that could not necessarily be breached through amendments. And we would also propose that there needs to be limits, some limits to amendments by requiring that any amendments relate to the performance and spending issues of departments and not allow the introduction of new spending items. And we would also emphasize that it's important that all amendments need to be accompanied by appropriate motivations and consideration of the impacts on the overall budget and service delivery, and also help and demonstrate the relationship between the proposed amendments to strategic priorities and key budget documents. And also the emphasis on allowing the MECs for finance and other affected MECs appropriate opportunities to make inputs and respond to proposed amendments. So we think that those would constitute some of the important aspects for norms and standards in relation to provincial legislation. So we that basically covers our presentation, and we will circulate some of the more specific proposals in relation to the various provisions in the bill. Thank you very much, Chair.
Well, thank you very much. Seems very comprehensive. Madam Scott.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I'm just...
I'm sorry. Yes, Chair. At the beginning, Cesar wanted to...
No, she said she's going to give us those.
So we're not allowing her to speak to them.
Not unless, in fact what can happen is that they can just make copies quickly. I will allow her to talk to that when the copies are here. But for now, Madam Scott.
Sorry, I picked up two things with respect to, I'm from KwaZulu-Natal, Chair of Finance. I picked up two recommendations from Treasury with respect to the norms and standards for provincial legislation that I just need a bit of clarity on. The first one is you talk about ceilings. You first mention it in the first slide, or the second slide on provincial legislation, where you say that basically the ceilings must be agreed to before you can look at an amendment. And for me, an understanding of that would be you've got your MTEF framework. The only kind of amendment you could consider is anything outside MTEF, which is a very, very small percentage of your budget in real terms, which means it really means that you're only giving the legislature an opportunity to play with a very small percentage of the overall equitable share. If you're going to put the word ceiling in, unless you want to explain to me what a ceiling is. I also wanted to know, in terms of that word ceiling, why you suggest that in terms of provinces, where I can't find it when it comes to the Finance Committee at parliamentary level. Why should there be a discrepancy between a Finance Committee at a legislature and their powers in terms of the Constitution versus, well, an act through the Constitution as to Parliament? The other thing that I also don't know and I need some clarity on is that you say that legislatures can't introduce new spending. Is that restriction also just in your recommendations limited to legislatures rather than Parliament? And if you could just explain the reason why you're discriminating.
Any other questions? Okay, we take those first. The ceiling for national government and provinces, I mean, for provinces and provincial legislature, there is a particular ceiling, and there's no ceiling nationally.
Yes, let me just say the bill as it the norms and standards that are recommended here for provinces essentially reproduce the same ideas that the bill establishes for the national budget. Ceilings in the legislation that applies to the national budget are built into the fiscal framework and division of revenue that has to be agreed before specific amendments can be considered. And so although it's correct, as has been pointed out, that the word ceiling doesn't appear in the bill. That is because that purpose is served by the Division of Revenue framework and the fiscal framework. And essentially, that's what any budget has to do. It has to set both an overall level of spending and allocate spending to particular functions within that envelope. And so the norms and standards that apply to provinces similarly have to do that, which simply means that a decision on the ceiling needs to be taken within which consideration then can be given to changes in the allocation of resources. Now, that doesn't mean the word ceiling needs to appear in those norms and standards. There will similarly be language that is aligned to the Division of Revenue framework. And in particular, in respect of provinces, we'll need to take into account the legislation and agreements between the Minister of Finance and MECs that relate to provincial borrowing, because changes to the overall level of spending in a province might have implications for borrowing for the province. I mean, that might be awkward wording there, and I think this, I need to go back and check. So I maybe need to come back on that. But I think the intention here is simply that as applied in the national budget, an amendment process is not seen as a vehicle through which new proposals can be parachuted into the budget process. And I think that is quite an important principle, that we're talking about changes to the plans for existing programs, not a new process through which new legislation or new spending programs can be introduced. Realistically, that's a process that needs to go through an engagement between the Treasury and a department and be built into departmental plans before it is part of the budget.
Any other, Mr. Sokoni?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that maybe we would really look forward to this further clarity on this expenditure ceiling. However, Chair, my question is around the norms and standards for provinces, and I see National Treasury really took time, to spell out what they think that should be contained in these norms and standards. Perhaps, maybe it's not. What worries me is that National Treasury says it supports the norms and standards for the provinces. Also make reference to the financial management bill. And only yesterday, we were raising this question of whether our intention is really to federalize this country. I've spent 10 years in the provincial legislature, and I've not seen that all the laws that were enacted at national parliament were also duplicated at the provinces. But instead, they had to, everybody had to fit into this, national act. Now, the worry, perhaps, that we have is it's a question of really whether we want provinces to here I announce the standard, you can do your own legislation, which perhaps they might have to because they also pass the appropriation bills. But it is what you call really at the end is how do we safeguard those non-resident standards to ensure that we have one, what you call legislation if for the Eastern Cape or for Northern Cape or for whatever province, rather than having these disparities, how do you want to call it, ensure that? And I think that also the National Treasury had that in mind when they went through these, what you call it, norms and standards in this detail that they went on. I think that also at the back of their mind is to say, how do we maintain this standard across the province? I'm saying, Chairperson, it's really the worry that I do have. And that's my only comment.
No. Let me just, before that, the National Treasury has responded to our own view about norms and standards that are not in the bill here in the first place. And secondly, that's exactly about ensuring that provinces do what they've got to do uniformly, so that you don't want a provincial legislature doing its own thing without applying these kinds of norms and standards. Now, safeguarding that is another matter. Because clearly, if it means whenever they do their pieces of legislation, they must be in line with this piece of legislation. And I think this is exactly the reason why we had said legislatures pass budgets, appropriation bills, etc., etc. And if that kind of a procedure is not available in provinces, it's going to create unevenness across provinces. And so clearly, you do want to ensure that at least, even though the budgets are not the same, at least some norm and standard must be able to guide provincial legislatures to be able to deal with this kind of a procedure. You don't want a situation where sometimes some provinces in the past have resorted to not passing the appropriation bill, for instance, precisely because something was missing. And part of the problem is exactly this problem, that there is absolutely no procedure to deal with that in some of the provinces. And so that was our own proposal in the last discussion, and they have responded to that. But then if you have any other thing to, you can add.
That's correct. And I think I would simply say, you know, we fully agree with the concerns that are being raised. What we have given you are just some suggestions drafted, you know, quite hastily late last night, and this certainly needs further work and careful consideration. And your committee's experience of the provincial budget processes, I think, is very important in getting that right. But let me perhaps just step back from the specific points that are being suggested here for norms and standards, because I think the essence of the problem can be very, very concisely formulated. What this bill proposes for the national budget is that the consideration of future spending plans in relation to departmental performance around the time of the tabling of the medium-term budget policy statement provides for an input from portfolio committees that the appropriations committee, as it suggested, need to take into account. And there's more to it than that. There's a certain budget framework that the Finance Committee has to consider, but it is essentially that consideration by a portfolio committee at the time that it is reviewing, exercising its oversight function in relation to a departmental performance, reviewing the future spending plan in relation to performance that the bill takes advantage of. And so it creates a new instrument, a budgetary review and recommendations report that a portfolio committee tables that the appropriations committee has to consider. Now, provinces have, of course, moved in different directions, but provinces do not have a medium-term budget policy statement. They do, however, also have portfolio committees that exercise oversight over their departments. And the essential thing, and perhaps the sort of details of specific items, one loses this, but the essential idea is simply that provinces, provincial legislatures, should similarly create a link between their oversight over departments, their review of departments, and any consideration of recommendations for changes to spending plans. And I think that essential idea is, if the committee is comfortable with that, can then be elaborated on, and those who are responsible for drafting here can give some consideration to how that idea might be adapted in norms and standards for provinces.
No, we will still have to come back to look. The MTBPS has far-reaching implications for provinces, and part of what has not been completed process-wise in terms of how we deal with MTBPS is how do we take provinces on board. We're still grappling with that. It's a pity this discussion has not surfaced sharply at the joint budget again. The chairperson of the NCOP about 2 years ago had raised this matter that we needed to, how do we engage? Because fundamentally it has very serious fundamental implications for provinces and municipalities. And so how do we build in that link in the MTBPS? It's a statement, but a fundamental statement. And so how do we then ensure that provinces not just sit at the hearings? How do they take the hearings into provinces in the context of the MTBPS? It's something that we might also want to look into in the provincial legislation, Madam Scott, just how do we deal with MTBPS, so that you also align that to this bill, because it has huge implications for provinces. Clearly, it is a matter that we must find a way of aligning as we deal with that, because you're right. For now, it is just something that is. In fact, we really don't, even nationally, our own public hearings, two, three, four days finished, and really provinces. Well, part of the big issues are really in provinces, especially in terms of the concurrent powers. When you're talking education, health, and so on and so on and so on. And so how do we link them to MTBPS? Local government has huge, very huge implications there again. So I'm saying it is a matter that we might want to try and look at in terms of refining the bill going forward. So that, again, you see part of the problem that you see here. One of the things that is not done again is aligning this bill to some of the other bills that you have. I'm worried about that, because you seem to think that, I mean, looking at the bills, they seem to be in isolation. And so clearly, as we speak about all of these things, how do we then align all of the kinds of bills that we have? There's this huge review of the PFMA. How does it align to all of these pieces of legislation that we have? There's a whole range of things, of work that still needs to happen at this level, but also at the provincial level. So clearly, we've got to find a way of dealing with that. Any other question, comment? Okay, so good.
Chair, I think that's in line with the comments that you have just made. Is perhaps the thinking of National Treasurer on comments on Section 7, for instance, say they spoke about the MTBBS being tabled to both houses. Was it thinking that this might lead to that kind of a situation, or it was just a mistake? I see that.
If I understand the point that you're making correctly, then it seems to me that you are perhaps suggesting that the bill should provide for a role of the NCOP at the time of the division of at the time of the medium-term budget statement in making recommendations that should be considered or should feed into provincial budget considerations. And that is a very compelling idea because it draws on the oversight role of the NCOP. It also would perhaps be a natural extension of the hearings that the NCOP has conducts every year that provides an important oversight role. And I think that is a very useful suggestion. It's not something that is covered in the norms and standards as we've suggested. It might not belong in norms and standards. It might actually require a section of the bill. But I would fully agree, Chair, that idea that the NCOP's oversight or the role of the NCOP in considering recommendations that might then go into the provincial legislature's review of their budgets, I think that idea is worth exploring. So.
No, look, I had not thought of it that way. Let's throw it to all of us to think about the provincial legislatures, the NCOP, because this joint committee, this joint budget committee that deals with the MTBBS, whose terms of reference are a bit clear. And so let's also try and think carefully about exactly the issue that you're raising now. Maybe with the view of not today or tomorrow, kind of medium to long term, how do we take it back into this matter? But as I was also saying, we also need to fine-tune how do we involve provinces in the MTBBS, finally. Again, together with the NCOP, I think you're right. And so clearly it's a matter that we need to think carefully about so that as we move forward, let's fine-tune the processes. Madam Scott.
I do want to put my comments with respect to the province in perspective because I'm actually totally supportive of norms and standards for the provinces because I think we do need to work with a common framework. I ask those questions because if I was sitting in National, I would be reviewing some of these things in this Act as a Finance Committee, not as Treasury. And I think that we need to recognise that there's an inherent conflict between Treasury and the Finance Committee on this bill, because Treasury wants to have the say in the appropriation, and the Finance Committee wants to be able to have a right through the Constitution to change it if they think. As the people's budget, they want to change it because they think that the priorities might be different. I'm not saying that it's a huge conflict, but it's an inherent one. And I think that if we're going to make an assumption, for example, that an amendment to legislation means that you can't introduce new things, I don't go with that at all. I do think that Parliament should be able to introduce new expenditure items. To me, the word amendment is a legal word. It does not mean you can excuse totally the introduction of new expenditure if Parliament deems fit. And it would have to be within the principles as listed in Section 8, Subsection 5, as long as it's within the framework and, you know, if there's a balance, why can't they? And I also think that the Parliament should be allowed to have a look. What Parliament already has the right to look at DORA, the Division of Revenue Act, and see whether it needs to be amended. So Parliament, we can't amend it at the moment, but the minute you can amend the money bill, we would be able to. So we wouldn't be bound by that as a ceiling. So I just think that I think committee needs to get out of this legislation. What does it want to be able to do? Does it just want to be able to add a few rand there and take a few rand from there to put over there, or does Parliament want to be able to exercise its oversight properly, and where they see non-performing departments, they actually say, okay, you've got 200 million last year, you only managed to spend 50 million, you're not going to get 200 million again. Doesn't matter how good friends you are with the Minister of Finance. You know, I'm being the devil's advocate here, but that's what I would think our role is. And I think that we must ensure that the provisions actually allow us to do what the Constitution says. The Constitution says that Parliament should have legislation to amend money bills. It doesn't restrict it in any way. So we must be careful we don't restrict ourselves.
Let me just for all your just for your own interest, just to elaborate on what she says. Oh, this one talks to one of the provinces you know, and I think you do want to hear this one. For about four or five years, we were sitting wondering where the equitable share of one department in one province was going to. And the whole chunk of the infrastructure grant was used. The whole chunk. In violation of the Division of Revenue Act. Because a political decision was taken by EXCO. Now, we really were looking, scratching and fighting with this department. Just to say, but what exactly is your budget for roads? Especially in the context of the equitable share. We never seem to see it. Now we know where all of that money went to. And I think this is what Madam Scott is talking about. Because all of that money had gone to reviving a train that takes about 24 hours to travel between two towns. Does it make economic sense? Something. Instead of building roads, instead of budgeting for roads in that province, they were not budgeting for roads. They were budgeting to revive this old train. Kuchu, 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 kuchu. That takes 24 hours. I mean, how would you want to build an economy traveling 24 hours? What's the distance between the two towns? 200 kilometers. 24 hours it is traveling. Now, the provincial legislature should then be empowered to say that this issue that she is raising, but also this huge political decision that was taken. You may go. You know the place.
Why is it so important for you?
No, he must repeat it when... Sure. Now, Mr. Botta knows, and we also know here that... there's a monster in one province that he also knows. We want to grapple with a problem that has been created by this monster. This monster decided to build a new building for themselves. And yet there's a huge underspending on their core business. Again, the core business is road. Building, road maintenance, etc., etc., etc. Again, how do we deal with that as a provincial legislature, where we sit at, and so on and so on. So this might be some of the things that we have as our own experiences from this side, which ordinarily must also be shared by treasuries, both national and provincial, so that when we talk this new spending, it must be in that kind of a context. Because you are really compelling people to focus on their core business. In her province now, the same department decided to fund professional soccer clubs. They're saying it's awareness on the road, whatever, etc. I'm saying these are some of the things that committees see, but sometimes are really not able to push through. So clearly we've got to find a way of dealing with that in a way that says calling the provincial treasury, calling the department and sitting together, looking at this spending that must happen and say, well, we've got to do this. Precisely because for this whole period, these people have not been doing what they ought to do. There are many, many stories that we can tell, and there are many stories that you also know. You know that one of the provinces had built a bridge in the middle of nowhere some 3, 4, 5 years back because people wanted to spend. Mr. Kolweni, Madam Tuna.
Yeah, Chairperson, maybe I want to allay my fear because seated here, I'm listening to the presentation and with all the parameters outlined here on the normal standard for the proper provinces. But the question that I have is that this bill is session 735 now. I want to check at which stage are the provinces having the insight of what is being proposed here. Thank you.
At no stage. That is why we've got to think very carefully. That is why we must interact with provinces very carefully. It's not a 76, and it's useful. I mean, Mr. Donaldson says, let's think carefully, it's correct. So that let's engage with our own colleagues just to ensure that this thing is done. We were mindful of the fact that it is that kind of a legislation, but we really were not going to allow and leave provinces out. Because you don't want a situation where provinces... I mean, look, as we speak now, provinces are doing some funny things on this thing called Political Funding Act. Again, there are no norms and standards there. Terrible stuff. But one of the big issues, these pieces of legislation that have financial implications must always be referred to the FFC to comment. That's one of the big issues they never do as provinces. I'm saying, if we then allow that, it comes back to what Mr. Sokon is saying, federalism. KZN, for instance, would have a particular threshold in terms of political funding, political party funding. And I mean, without considering the cake, if you like. And so clearly there are problems there. I know some MECs have come to me asking us how we can intervene in trying to deal with that piece of legislation. I did say to them that part of the first problem is that those that have passed it have not allowed the FFC to comment. And for me, it's problematic. And Madam Tuna.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think perhaps it could be a good thing if we use the Intergovernmental Relations Act, because at times if one sort of imposes oneself onto province, it may not seem good, but if we use that level of good intergovernmental relations, there are many issues that we can discuss and work out relating to norms and standards. Because, I mean, we are there and we are supposed to be the ears on the ground of the people's needs. And then we can come back to the provinces, sit with the, say, the chairpersons of the finance committees there, and see how can we work some of the things other than come back to the main committees and discuss what was picked up from the people on the ground. Thank you.
Well, that's what we're doing all the time. Mr. Potter.
Yes, you raise a few issues. What is actually also I'm concerned about the norms and standards of provinces, because provinces, the norms and standards, what I'm saying actually to provinces must be really strict. sometimes I think we must have a some idea of perhaps more directly grants for purposes, because you mentioned one issue of a province and would we refuse to underspending to pay that back. You know yourself that the Department of Monster was created there by a political decision. It was a political decision to create a monster. That monster grows so big now that they take 85% of the budget of the Department of Transport. They are actually now the Department of Transport, and they account to no one. And that is a fact. They account to no person except to the MEC. The HOD of the Department of Transport not have no say. She got less authority what I had here to sit in Cape Town. And that is the issue what we had to change the money bills, and sometimes in provinces political issues play a big role. And let me be face that sometimes a leader makes certain proposals and then the budget must link to that proposals on top of things. And I'm concerned about that issues, that the service delivery coming not up to standard. The moment you play with budgets in one department to another department, was Department of Health in Limpopo, was under budget according to the norms and standard because of cutting from here to putting there and that type of things. So that is, we had to look to this thing very, very seriously in regarding of the norms and standards for provinces. I'm talking about a province, not only one province. You mentioned certain issues of different provinces where money is shifting and for political decisions. And sometimes I see also in the presentation the MEC of the executive of finance. But sometimes the executive MEC of finance is under so much political pressure that I say that. And I want to say that straight, that he can't be otherwise to back down, step three steps back to accommodate certain issues. And I'm concerned about that, Chair, because what you mentioned, all these issues what you mentioned in different provinces, is actually in fact step back by MECs to accommodate certain priorities. Now, what is a priority? Is the roads a priority? Or is health a priority? Or what is the priority of agriculture and all that type of things? And you know yourself in the province where the one department total overspent because of certain, there was a top slice of other departments to repay back that overdraft of 397 million rand. And that other department could not deliver because of that issue. So that is issues what we have to consider very, very careful to bring them. As I say, we are not a federal state. Definitely not. Neither with finance. Finance is implementation situation by provinces. Although we gave them some gap to maneuver around, but we must be careful to see that these things is not happening in regarding of certain processes.
No, look, you are right, Mr. Porter. We are trying to assist the ministries of finance and the legislatures in particular. You know, he's raising some other stories. The formula is clear in terms of the social services. But in his province, for instance, health, the formula says 26%. But then health was given 24%. Now, where the other money went to, nobody has yet told us up to now. And so, we've got to be firm in terms of these matters and this procedure. And I think what you were raising is that let's look at these norms and standards, all of us, carefully. But also what my colleague was really raising, we won't be asking for negotiating mandates on this one. But let's really find a way of sharing these norms and standards with our own colleagues in the provincial legislature. I mean, tomorrow and Friday, we shall be briefing on the FABL. There is a direct link between this piece of legislation and FABL. And so how do we share without really asking for a negotiating mandate, but how do they firm up some of the issues that appear here so that when we come back to pass it, let's firm these norms and standards on the basis of the experiences. We've had the serious experiences where we seated ourselves. And so let's share this with the colleagues in the provinces. I will then give Mr. Sokoni, and then we'll come back to the other piece that is outstanding has been delivered. What's your comment, Mr. Sokoni? And then we take the other specific comments regarding the other clauses.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll speak on her behalf. We're sitting together. I think that, what Comrade Colin is raising about this bill being a Section 75, I think that is a very, what we call it, important observation. It's clear that even us as Parliament here, two houses, sometimes we only think sometimes about ourselves, not thinking that what are the implications of the particular legislation that we're doing on other people. Now, we have what we call picked up the fact that there's a need for norms and standards. Treasury has also put into that. Now, if, for instance, because it's a Section 75, we say it's a Section 75, there's nothing that we can do about it, let's pass it. We're lucky we have a colleague from KZN and many of the colleagues are not here. Now, the description of Section 75 in terms of the Constitution says is those pieces of legislation which have nothing to, or no implications for, or it says, I say it's financial implications for provinces. But clearly, once we pass this bill tomorrow, it will have direct implications on provinces. On things that need to be done. So all that I'm saying is, even at this late stage, we might need to find a way of saying so. How do provinces as well comment on this piece of legislation? That will have impact on them. Personally, I would really like us to, what you call it, maybe to look at that, to look at our processes here, so that we can find a way. Because I'm not sure if next year you come, you say we have passed this piece of legislation, it's an act, then you go to them and say, look, there's this act that is there, but you will need to come up with your own pieces of legislation. This is a framework for norms and standards that you can do that at that late stage. That's why I think that, I don't know, that's why I think that maybe we can have a relook on what is it that can be done to involve them. I don't want to comment on that we would like to pass these pieces of legislation now, yesterday. But I think that when we pass a piece of legislation, it is something that we want to pass, something that we can really be also be proud of and ensure that it will serve the interest that it was intended to. But if we pass something that we know that is not going to stand any test, it doesn't make sense. Sure.
Madam? I want to suppress you. What is this matter? Is it a matter of life and death? Mike?
That we need to have one focal window. But then there are circumstances which cannot be avoided. Let's say the Eastern Cape with its weather conditions where the schools are blown off not because of human activities, because of the nature's way. Schools are blown off and children always end schooling under the trees. And then they need more money. And that needs a federal concept. Even if we are not a federal but we have got to think.
Lalela.
Yes,
when there is a disaster, there is a disaster for relief fund. But Mamela Mamchun, there's also a contingency reserve for those issues we are talking about. But there's also for unforeseen circumstances adjustment appropriation in October. So don't worry about it. Madam, the outstanding issues, the
thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will just go briefly through the additional document and highlight a few of the more important substantive points, and then there's quite a few points which are really just, you know, suggestions for improved wording or slight typographical amendments, etc. So initially, we've proposed some perhaps adjustments or amendments to a few of the definitions. I won't really touch on those too much. In relation to Section 2B, we've noted a possible difficulty that might arise in the way that the provision is worded currently, in that the fiscal framework adopted by Parliament may differ from the framework submitted to Parliament. And so perhaps that needs to be taken into consideration, and there may need to be some slight adjustments to the provision in relation to that. In relation to Section 3, regarding the application of the bill, we would note that the application... we would note in relation to Section 3 that the application of the bill is perhaps rather wider than simply two proposed amendments. It sets out a series of budgetary steps and processes that have to be followed, and irrespective of whether amendments are proposed, but which allow for amendments to be considered. So perhaps some consideration to be given to somewhat broadening the definition of the scope of application of the bill. In relation to Section 4, subsection 4, paragraph B, we just note that there may need to be just a slight adjustment in some of the terminology used there. In relation to Section 4, subsection 5, we would suggest that consideration might also be given to providing for some consultation to take place between committees, the appropriations committees, and other committees. And that could be positive for the process. And then in relation to Section 5, subsection 1, we would note that it's important to consider not just the performance of departments per se, but also all of the other government agencies and accounts which are controlled by or associated with the department, which often have very important service delivery responsibilities and are implementing agencies for very important projects and through which expenditure is managed. So we would suggest that it's important that those also be encompassed within that subsection. The wording here makes it clear that departmental plans and performances should also cover such accounts, agencies, and entities. So we would suggest the wording be clarified in that respect. In respect of subsection 3C of section 5, where the phrase forward use of resources is used, we would suggest perhaps a more explicit terminology should be used to refer to medium-term plans, service delivery objectives, and expenditure estimates. In relation to section 6, subsection 1D, the use of the phrase arms of government within a sphere is a bit unclear. The MTBPS at present does provide a functional and economic breakdown of expenditure estimates, and this is well understood, but arms of government is perhaps a term that's used in various ways, so perhaps the terminology there could be amended slightly. With respect to subsection 1F, we note that at present the MTBPS is quite a concise policy statement and is not really a detailed review of spending by each department or province. There is a table that sets out sort of a tabular financial statement of provisional estimates of spending for each department and province. And perhaps it would be better to refer to that as sort of a preliminary financial statement. And we also would note that a really detailed review of spending could not really realistically be done as part of the MTBPS. And then in relation to Section 7, in the document it says 7D to F, but those comments should relate to subsection 2D to F, 7 subsection 2D to F. We would recommend that it should be indicated that these are projected contributions of revenue categories or projections of debt levels to distinguish from targets. And in respect of paragraph G, we would say that it's unclear what is meant by estimates for contingent liabilities for future years. At present, contingent liabilities are reported as at the most recent year end or projected for the end of the current year, but there is no obvious or method or purpose for projecting future contingent liabilities. And in respect of subsection 4, we would say that this reporting requirement in that subsection would overlap to some extent with the requirements of the explanatory memorandum on the division of revenue bill. So there might be some consideration that there might be some unnecessary overduplication of reporting there. In respect of section 8, subsection 5, we would suggest that the reach of this section is a bit long, and it should perhaps just refer to an explanation that a committee should provide for proposed amendments. And so there could be perhaps some rewording to simplify the provision somewhat. And it's not clear that ensuring that the cost of spending is not deferred to future generations could really be achieved. Ultimately, there is going to always be some judgment involved in such considerations. I think that basically covers most of the important points. A lot of the other points are more typographical and wording amendments. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, so thanks for that. You know what we will do? We will take some clarifications on the issues you've just raised, but then allow for people just to go and have a thorough look at the proposals that you're making. Mr. Jenkins also must have an opportunity just to go back and have a look at all of them, so that when we then come back and discuss, we shall have read the bill and the proposals, etc. And so we will not today finalize all the issues, because really the submissions you've made are kind of substantial. And so clearly I will just take now clarities on this submission that has been made. Mr. Porter.
Yes, one thing that is, because this is a Section 75 bill, this one, and I agree with you that. But how that we, yes, will deal now, we were coming back to a pass the bill, if after we clarify this input now. But how will we clarify now this norms and standards to be a part of the bill, or is there, and will maybe not be a part of the bill at all? So we must separate it totally.
No, we will. It will be part of the bill. I have also spoken to the chairperson, the acting chairperson of the portfolio, and we have agreed that there might be this arrangement, because we've got to. He also agreed that they did some oversight from that side of not creating space for these norms and standards. So the norms and standards would be part and parcel of the bill. In other words, it would be some amendment, if you like, from us broadly. But as I was saying, please let's also allow our colleagues in the provinces this weekend as we go back just to give us some notes that would refine those norms and standards. It's not necessarily a mandate. I'm saying it is just refining those amendments. For instance, I will have to do it. Let's all do it in our provinces, just to say, in terms of the money bill procedure, these are the things that we're proposing. They might think something is not important. They can strike it off. They can motivate for you and with you. Let's do that. And as I was saying, let's think through. We're not in a big rush. I think in the next 2-3 weeks we'll pass it. But in the meantime, let's start interacting with our own colleagues. Fortunately, KZN is here, Madam Tunu, to interact with Mrs. Scott. But she can also give us some inputs herself, just broadly, not as a mandate for you, but broadly as her own comment and maybe the comments of the committee in the norms and standards and any other part in terms of the bill that we think would assist to really make it what Mr. Sokone was saying, something to be proud of. Right, any other comments on the, just as clarities, on the clarities now, on this last presentation?
Yeah, Chair, I think that my comment is really on this section 2B. Maybe when we go back, it's something that we really need to look at. I mean, if I'm not sure that Parliament would really like that there is this budget that is presented and we come up with something new altogether. Because I mean the process of the budget is over a very long, it's a very long process. Now, I thought that maybe our approach would be what you were saying, for instance, in terms of looking at the experiences. And I think that the whole idea that was referred to of the annual reports, so that to expose members on this thing, is not something that says we want to do, as Parliament. maybe something that when we discuss, we need to look at exactly what are we saying, things that we want to say, or some perhaps we. Because I think that sometimes, I mean, this is a new terrain that we are embarking on, and I'm not sure if we would really want to, you know, to say, let's drive in South Africa with driver's license, say you keep left, am I right? And if we say, no, we want to drive on the right now, when you have not informed the other people that you'll be driving on the right, there will be a head-on collision here. That is something that we really need to to check properly when we do the detail of this.
Okay. You see, one of my own concerns really is it's not to Treasury now, Mr. Jenkins. It's the fact that this bill seems to be focusing mainly on two money bills. The main focus is the budget. And then there is something on the revenue loss only. That's kind of it's not very comprehensive in my view, basically. And so that does worry me, because if you're looking at the budget broadly, I think for now, and I'm not sure why the division of revenue is part and parcel of this bill, because the process of the division of revenue is clear and has no qualms and no problems, basically. I mean, we've passed the division of government. I know many people say it has not been amended. It is our responsibility that we did not amend the division of revenue bill. And of course, when we use it as a stick, by the way, we had to use it tactically some, I think, 2 years ago, and it did serve our own purpose when some people decided that they were much more powerful than Parliament. And so when we said, well, the time has come for us then to use our power, we got them all in line. I'm saying the division of revenue is not a big problem, basically, Mr. Donaldson. We do it fine, it has no problem. And I'm not sure why it is here. And then it does look like it is also proposing that some other things are proposed. Again, it says, division of revenue bill must be passed no later than 35 days after the adoption of the fiscal framework by Parliament, blah, blah, and so on. I'm saying it does seem that we're going to be having problems. I'm not sure how. Because part of the big issue here, for instance, are the recommendations of the FFC that relate directly to the division of revenue annually. The Committee on Appropriations must consult with the Financial and Fiscal Commission and allow this opportunity to... I'm just saying, just the division of revenue, for instance, also responds comprehensively to the recommendations of the FFC in this thing. Schedule E of the Division of Revenue Act. Something I'm not sure why we need it here. But I'm worried about some of the other pieces of legislation, the fuel levy, etc., that are not here as a procedure. And so we're only targeting two, and in the main, the budget. And so clearly for me, that's a bit problematic. I'm not sure how we're going to overcome that one. Maybe the mandate was to focus on the budget, but also basically the I mean, if you're looking at MTBS, MTBS is just a statement. It's not a money bill, for instance. But, of course, it does. It is a particular process that also might relate to this thing.
Thank you. Just a quick clarification, because this is a very important point, that there are different kinds of money bills. There is clearly a recognition that amendments to the budget are about possible changes to spending plans, but this bill recognizes, and I want to emphasize this because the committee, you know, is going to be told that it doesn't recognize this. This bill does recognize that Parliament might want to consider changes to the overall fiscal envelope, might want to consider changes to the deficit level, might want to consider changes to the fiscal framework. And changes to the fiscal framework, of course, would have implications for the Division of Revenue Bill. It is quite right that there is, at present, no impediment to amending the Division of Revenue Bill, but this Parliament has not made such changes in the past. But the bill recognizes that Parliament may wish to make changes to the overall fiscal framework. Those changes need to be considered for their impact on the economy as a whole and for their impact on fiscal policy and projections of debt and the overall performance of the economy. Those need to be considered in relation to those macroeconomic and fiscal responsibilities of Parliament, and that is clearly distinct from consideration of specific spending plans of specific departments. Or, the Chair is quite right, some money bills relate to fiscal activities, levies, activities of what is called here extra budgetary funds and accounts. Some money bills deal with things that are not part of the National Revenue Fund, not part of the main budget, and also need a process. And so there is recognition here of a procedure that may be needed for dealing with other bills, and that's in the latter part of the bill. We haven't talked about that specifically, but there may well be concerns about those processes. The intention here was to keep that quite simple, and I think it does that quite sensibly. But if I may just conclude by saying, you know, we have raised a number of queries, some cases specific suggestions on wording, some suggestions on norms and standards. I think the discussion this morning has highlighted some other issues that we need to think about. I certainly take the point that has been made that the wording that is suggested there about not allowing the introduction of new spending items is too rigid. There needs to be a different wording. But several people have alluded to the problem that this is really intended to address, which is opportunistic incorporation of special interests into budget allocations. And we're all aware of just how damaging that is. In the American system in particular, where legislation on air safety ends up having extra clauses tagged on for, you know, a new airport to be built in this or that state, et cetera, et cetera. We don't want legislation that allows for opportunistic special interests to take advantage of the budget process. And so an appropriate sort of balance has to be kept between the need to consider a wide range of amendments and the need to keep the budget process coherent and integrated. And we are certainly happy to assist in perhaps elaborating on the comments that we've given you. We'll rewrite this, write up this submission a little more carefully. It needs a bit of elaboration, perhaps add a few points to it, and we're happy to assist with the further work of refining the bill.
Right, that's that. Now we have to listen to the people's budget. Is it a matter of life and death, Mancun? Your mic?
asked on 5.1c clarity on shifting or diversion of funds after the appropriation. Is it clarified that it can be done through gazetting? Because I came across one incident where somebody said, no, if the money belongs to the government, it can take it to any function, and nobody can question me. I came across that. And then on the question of opportunistic special interest, would we say PPP may provide such a platform for opportunistic special interest by people who are helping us with finances in the
country?
Thank you.
The last one we're not going to respond to. Respond to the first one.
The PFMA provides for some movement of funds between subdivisions of a program or subdivisions of the main divisions of a vote. So accounting officers do have some discretion if they find that some programs are spending a little more than anticipated, other programs may be underspending. They have some scope for shifting funds within the vote. There are also specific rules that allow for a shift of up to 8% of money from one program to another program, and there are provisions in the PFMA that allow a department to approach Treasury if there are other shifts of money that are needed. There is a difficult balance here, and the balance is between ensuring that the budget, when it is executed, as it is implemented by a department during the year, adheres to what Parliament intends, adheres to the purposes and the allocations and the relative priorities that are set out in the budget, but also allows for the kind of flexibility that is needed because things during the year don't work out exactly as anticipated. So the Department of Trade and Industry cannot project with complete certainty how much is going to be claimed on this incentive program or how much it's going to cost to finish a particular project. And so all budget systems have to allow some discretion within the amounts that, within the overall purposes and amounts allocated by Parliament. And the rules within which departments can shift money, can deal with spending pressures in one area, or can adjust their plans if things go a little more slowly or more quickly on one program relative to another. The rules that govern those adjustments are quite specifically set out in the PFMA. We would certainly welcome suggestions on how to improve those procedures. They're quite a problematic part of any budget system. But I would give the assurance that this is something that that is quite a big part of the work that the Treasury does and the work that provincial treasuries do every year in ensuring that Parliament's intentions are adhered to without unduly restricting departments.
The time has come for stretching and taking some juice and water and tea for 5 minutes, and then we'll come and take the next presentation. Mr. Donaldson, you are free to go.